Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Professor Jennifer Curtin this morning. Kia ora, Jennifer. How are you?
Morena, Rachel. I'm good, thank you.
That is very good to hear. We've got some more National Party changes to talk about at the moment. Simon Bridges has announced his resignation. This is causing a bit of a stir, I guess, inside the party, but it also means outside the party we're going to see a by-election in Tauranga as well. What's going on here? Do you think this is significant for National? Is it significant more broadly for our political landscape? What's happening?
Well, I mean, I think we have to put this in the context that I think Simon Bridges, when he decided to stay on after he didn't contest the leadership against Luxon, in a way, pulled his candidature and didn't go to a vote, that I think he was, you know, hoping that Luxon might not do as well in the polls as what he has done. But now that National is back up in the high 30s, which, and with ACT and the latest polls, the death they could govern. Bridges has seen the light and realised that the chances of him being Prime Minister are slim to nothing, really. So, and he's a very ambitious man and he's still relatively young. And so, in a sense, it's probably earlier than what we anticipated. But it's not a wholly surprising result. I think the fact that he's not serving out his term, but instead he's going and triggering a by-election, is in a sense almost typical Bridges, because he likes, you know, he's going out with a bang in a way, and he's putting some pressure on a party that he feels, and particularly the Liberals that are sitting around Luxon, you know, who he's had to cede some power to, like Chris Bishop and Nicola Willis. So they were the two that were involved in the first coup, which supported Todd Muller. So the by-election will be probably more interesting, I think, than the minor reshuffle that we've seen. And we can come to that when we're talking about the cost of living crisis, because, you know, they're really going to do well in Parliament. But the by-election is interesting because it's going to cost a lot of money, and we're having this, you know, this whole we need to reduce spending debate. But also, you know, Bridges is one of the few Māori in the National Party caucus, and so there's going to be some pressure on National to really think hard about the candidate that they put up here. Shane Retty and Tanya Tapsell are being floated as two possibilities. But, of course, they've got Shane Jones and Winston Peters looking over their shoulders in this upcoming by-election as well.
Is this going to be the return of Winston Peters? Is this what we might be seeing here, or is this just a lot of talk?
Look, I, you know, you can never say never with New Zealand First, I have to say. But we do have to remember that it really might also depend on how many other parties stand candidates. And the reason is because we don't, you know, we run a first-past-the-post way of doing things in our electorate. I do think that this is one of the, you know, because it's one of the safer National seats, and Bridges has really firmed that up over the years. He took it off Peters. The chances of it going back to New Zealand First are probably pretty slim.
It'll be interesting to see what happens there. Let's talk about the cost of living. It kind of ties into something you've already mentioned about the National Party. It was a big focus of Christopher Luxon's speech last week. We also saw him talking about removing taxes, and people are suggesting that's part of what's contributed to National going up in the polls, perhaps, in the last week. What's your take on, I guess, National's position on the cost of living crisis, but also on the crisis itself?
So there's domestic pressures on the economy, but there's also the international dimension, you know, and the tragic war in Ukraine and the broader cost of living and COVID-related pressures on the international economy. So we're seeing very similar challenges being faced by people in the UK, where their wages are not keeping up with inflation, and the cost of living crisis is present there as well. So this is a real thing that, you know, like the fallout from the pandemic and the ongoing nature of supply chains, but also the war in Ukraine. So there's that part. But I think where Luxon and his colleagues are really working hard now is they're relishing the fact that they've got something other than COVID to talk about. And historically, they know that they're seen as the party that is most seen by voters, historically at least, as more likely to be able to manage the economy. And you know, tax cuts are often popular with national space. You know, like, let's be clear that those who earn more get the biggest cut. You know, that's the nature of tax cuts. I think this is going to be a real challenge for Labor in the sense that they would have set their budget priorities for the May budget in place when the Treasury outlook was much more positive than what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And so they may have to be going back and doing some reconsideration of the sorts of things that they were planning on introducing and maybe recalibrate a few things, because they're going to want to ensure that their base, which are the people who are poorer and on benefits and less, just generally less well off and less likely to cope with this crisis, they're going to have to do something for them. And that might be about raising benefits, which will be risky politically, but is important if they are to be seen as the Social Democratic Party that's looking after the least well off.
It was interesting to listen to Luxon speak. He was speaking in a way that, I guess, seemed like he was speaking to perhaps a lower income demographic, but everything he was saying was definitely going to be benefiting a much higher income demographic. Do you think there's a sort of perhaps dissonance in what the National Party is saying their policy is going to achieve and what it's actually potentially going to achieve if they were given that power? Because it's sounding an awful lot like trickle down economics from some of the things we've heard from them.
Yeah, they haven't really said how they're going to pay for the tax cuts. I think, you know, the thing about tax cuts and the thing about campaigning is that anything that's really short and easy to say and resonates with voters is a real winner. And so tax cuts, everybody gets a cut. It's just that, and those who are aspirational, so we've seen this with Liberal Party politics in Australia, that the Conservatives can be really good at speaking to those who are less well off. If they're also starting in small businesses or working in a family business or have aspirations to be firmly in the middle class, and sometimes Labor doesn't speak well to those, whereas we know under John Howard, for example, in Australia, he was brilliant at winning those voters away from Labor, saying that they could get on, you know, the ladder of opportunity. I think the thing about National now is that they are talking about these tax cuts, but they're not saying that they're going to cut benefits.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where this tends to go.
Yes.
They are talking about they have a real problem with how many people are on the unemployment benefit and on main benefits. That's sole parents. That's people with disabilities.
Absolutely.
And we should be concerned, I think, by, you know, the lack of attention to where they're going to find the money for tax cuts.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about the border reopening. That's another huge thing that's happened this week. We've also seen an acceleration in the timeline around getting tourism back, I mean, international tourism back into Aotearoa. What's your, I guess, biggest takeaways from the changes we've seen in the last wee while to our border? It's gone from very strict to quite a lot of change quickly, which is the nature of the pandemic. But what's your biggest takeaway at the moment?
Well, I think there's just so much pressure on the government to do this, really. They were getting hammered by sectors out, you know, as well as by both ACT and National on this about, you know, a really clear timeline. I think we think tourism is going to be the biggest winner, and that, you know, in terms of services, has a big flow-on effect for New Zealand and all a range of aspects of the economy. I think it will potentially have impacts on the higher education sector and also the secondary school sector if we're thinking about those with visas able to come and take up education opportunities if they come from these list of countries. And, of course, you know, the ski season's coming up, and the Prime Minister has said that, you know, Australians love coming across the ditch to go skiing. And so this injection of, you know, funds into the economy will be something that the government will really want to see happen. Of course, there are critics because the wash through of Omicron hasn't happened evenly across the country yet. There are still a lot of vulnerable communities out there. So she's taking a risk because the number of deaths, sadly, is still going up. And her government is taking a risk with this. But I think the political pressure was just too high.
We've heard a lot in the, I guess, the course of the pandemic when we have had this pause on international tourism about how perhaps as a country we need to be looking beyond that as a major income stream for us. Is that something you would agree with? And do you think it's possible for New Zealand to get beyond that image as this sort of tourism haven, I guess?
Yeah, I suppose. I think perhaps the double-edged sword of this is the way in which we have managed COVID. And the way in which our democratic practices have, you know, been able to cope with, you know, protests aside, what the lockdowns and the various other things does make us look like internationally like a country that is, you know, like a haven, as well as being beautiful. So yes, you know, we're probably always going to be a destination of choice for some who can afford to come this far. But that said, I think we've seen in the last couple of days there are other shifts in the way our economy is working. So a new report out from the New Zealand US Council was showing that actually our digital services trade to the US in particular has really increased lately. And so while agriculture will still be our primary export commodity for a while, there are other aspects to our economy that don't get the same kind of headlines as tourism that are growing, and so we may see a diversification, if you like, and less of a reliance on this over time.
Well, thank you so much, Professor Jennifer Curtin, for your time this morning. It's always great to have you on the show. Take care, and we'll talk in a few weeks.
Kia ora. Thanks, Rachel. Bye.
Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
Thank you so much.